Yeah, at that time had belonged to Prince Kuhio and the Adwiga team paddling the race down to the harbor on a regatta day when the other races were the usual rowing races. And all three canoes came across the line, bang, 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 and it was fortunate, luckily, that the A'a won the race.
Well, that's great. Now, for years, Toots, you have been the recognized expert in outrigger canoe design and building. It'd be interesting to hear how a canoe is constructed. Could you give us a rundown on the process from the cutting of the tree to the finished product? That's a pretty big order, but could you give us some of the dope on it?
Well, it's just like any boat. You design it for a purpose. If a boat is being used as an ore boat or an oil tanker, or it's being used as a passenger liner, or it's being used as a racing boat, you have to design it for your purpose. The same thing with the Hawaiian canoes in the olden days. They probably built their canoes for the purpose that they needed. Of course, they were limited to some extent in the tools that they had at their disposal. They were limited to in the size of the tree that was up in the mountains, and they were limited to get that log down to the seashore. So they had a pretty tough time of it. However, a canoe that was made for fishing would be anything that would be wide, we'll say wide and deep, so that it would be loaded, could be loaded up with fish. On the other hand, a racing canoe could not be used as a racing canoe. A fishing canoe or a freight boat could not be used as a racing boat because there's a principle of hydraulics involved in the whole thing. And the canoes that we have, they now have come to the, we have made the rules that the canoe would weigh 400 pounds. Well, that means that as long as a canoe weighs 400 pounds dead weight, it's going to settle and displace 400 pounds of water. Now, in the case of a rowboat, you understand the rowboat is rather wide, 4 or 5 feet wide, and only probably 16, 18 feet long. It may weigh 400 pounds. But it's going to take a lot more power to move that rowboat, the same speed that a canoe can develop. Why? The reason is this, that it's, as I said, a principle of hydraulics. At the waterline, you've got the skin friction across the beam of the boat. And the rowboat being so wide, you've got more skin friction than you have at the canoe, although you displace the same amount of water. Now, the canoes that we've been using for a number of years, like the celebrated Malia canoe, which belongs to the surf club, was taken as a, you might say, as a standard unit of measurement to go by. It weighed about 400 pounds. But those canoes were averaging about 39 feet long and 20 inches or so wide at the waterline. Now, it makes no difference what the canoe looks like above the waterline. As long as it weighs 400 pounds, it's going to settle and displace 400 pounds of water. It depends on how that 400 pounds of water is shaped or displaced. That determines what it is, its efficiency for speeding. Now, the canoe we've been using for the number of years, as I said, we're averaging about 20 inches wide at the waterline. After we get the Tahitian people into the act and we get their canoes up here and we've been down to Tahiti, we find that their canoes are averaging about 16 inches wide at the waterline, and that their canoes have been used in the smooth water down in the harbor in the lagoons. Well, that difference of 4 inches between 16 inches and 20 inches wide makes a big difference. Furthermore, their bows are quite sharp, whereas our Hawaiian canoes are round on the bottom, which means that as that canoe goes forward, it's pushing some of that water in front of it instead of cutting it and throwing it to the side. All those little peculiarities, or you might say efficiency, determines what is the better type of racing canoe. Herbert Carney has stated in some of his articles appearing in the Outrigger Club forecast, mentions about what different canoes were made for purpose of fishing, surfing, war canoes, and the racing canoes. But the racing canoes have gone out of style in Hawaii because they, for a number of years, no canoe racing was carried on.
Fiberglass canoes are very popular now. Could you tell us, Toots, how these were made, or are made, rather?
Well, up until about 1959 or so, I believe it was, we didn't have any plastic canoes in the islands here. And when they started having the races up on the mainland, I tried to get the Hawaii Canoe Racing Association interested in this project, because it was, the association was made up of all these different clubs around here, and all the clubs had different boys and girls paddling. My thought was that if we started the kids up there interested in canoe paddling, we got them to come down to Hawaii, would be a fine thing, exchange of visitation. And it would be like a reward to be selected on the team each year that goes to from Hawaii to California. It wouldn't be a case of sending a team that was going to win. No, it would be a case of giving all the kids a chance to get away from Hawaii, go to California, and get the kids from California to come to Hawaii. Well, I tried to get the Canoe Racing Association interested, and I sent them a letter explaining two things. One was to get interested in this development of the canoe racing up in California from Catalina Island over to Newport Beach. The other thing I had in this letter that I sent the Canoe Association was the start making and using fiberglass canoes. And I explained why. You see, it takes so long to go up to the mountains, select, find the tree that's suitable for a racing canoe, knock it down, bring it down, work it out. It takes, it takes a couple of years for that thing to season out. Where it was, to the point where it wouldn't crack, you might say. And you're depriving a lot of kids that want to paddle, but they don't have the facilities. Now, these plastic fiberglass canoes can be made up in jig time in the course of a season, either from a mold that they might use of an existing canoe, or they could make a brand new plug mold to the standards that they want to adopt. And they could make them so fast that you'd be able to furnish the kids with the canoes to paddle in. Well, all through these years, the Canoe Association never showed any interest in helping to send a team up to the mainland, and they never even answered my letter. But that's it. So they, eventually, I forgot when it was, but I had a 28-foot canoe, plastic canoe made my office was on Ward Street by Craig and Company. And I told the boy people on the beach, I said, this canoe will look a little slightly different from what we're accustomed to seeing. But I said, I guarantee two things. I guarantee it'll surf better and it'll steer easier, which it did because of the way the shape of the hull was made. Mm-hmm. Yes, these fiberglass canoes are a great thing now. As I said, you can make them up in short order and... Lots of them here, even up to the mainland now. I understand they got canoe clubs from San Jose down into the Bay Area and down all the way down to Southern California, down as far as San Diego.
Yeah. Now, actually, the upkeep on the plastic canoes is a great deal cheaper, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The plastic canoes will stand much more buffeting around, knocking around, whereas with a core canoe, if it gets a blow on the side, it could develop a crack in my canoe that I have at my home now. Up on the right bow side there's a crack where another canoe hit it on the side as they were going around the turn in the race. Now, a plastic canoe will stand a better blow. Furthermore, a plastic canoe could be damaged, say, one day before the race and patched up that night and made ready for the next day. Whereas if a core canoe got a bad blow to it, was damaged badly, it wouldn't be ready for the next day for the start of the race.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Toots, the Outrigger Canoe Club, Waikiki Beach Services, was started in 1948 under the Sally Hales management. Do you recall what effect this had on the club?
Well, again, we can go back to 1933 or 34, I think it was. I went to the board of directors of the club. At that time, We kids out the club, they used to take the club canoes out the beach, out surfing, and we'd get paid by the people that we took them out in the canoe. The club didn't get anything out of that. And over the Huinalu, by the Moana Hotel, the Huinalu boys, they went out in their canoes. So I went to the director of the club and put a proposition up to them to let me start this concession on the beach. I said, Waikiki Beach may not be a very wide, expansive stretch of sand beach. And I said, it may be full of coral out in the water. But I said, this is Waikiki Beach, a world-famous beach. I said, there's all kinds of money to be made here. I said, let me start this concession on the beach here. We'll get the Huinalu boys in on the whole thing. We'll set up a little stand out on the beach information. A daily report will be sent into the club as to what was done, how much was come in. The club would get its share, and everybody would be should be happy. They appointed a committee of three to talk it over with me, and I'm waiting to this day for that committee to talk matters over with me. Well, in 34, then I left Oahu here and went over to Molokai for about 3 or 4 years work. And in 36, Bill Mullahy came back from Jones Beach, New York, and they put him in charge of the beach services, and everything that we had outlined there was carried on there. Well, that thing turned out to be a gold mine for the club. It produced a lot of income.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize Bill Mullahy was involved in that. That's great. Tuts, do you remember when the first professional salaried manager of the Outrigger Canoe Club was hired?
I'm not sure about that, Ken. However, I'll say this, that in the good old days when we were kids at the club had a very efficient manager in the person of Ol Sasaki. Sasaki used to run our commissary over there, and those are the days when we used to have ice cream and double-deckers, cones and all that. And Sasaki would always be ready with our keys. In those days, the club had its board of directors, but it did not have a general manager. But Sasaki, with his help, used to run the club. Well, after 1925, when the Royal Hawaiian Hotel went up and the club was changed around somewhat, somewhere probably around as late as 1930 or so, I believe the club started getting a professional manager. And some of the managers we had over there, I remember, was one was Henry DeGoro, one was old Pop Heenlin, another one was McGill, and another was George Cherry. And during the war then for a while, Gay Harris was even running the club, because at that time everybody was away in service in the uniform at the war, and it was not very easy to get somebody to handle the club.
Yeah, well, that brings us up to date on the managers. And now, you mentioned Sasaki. Now, he was with the club for many years. Do you remember how long?
No, but he was at the club when I got into the club. He was a boy in 1917 or so. And I think he stayed on with the club for at least 10 years or so after that. But he was the one we all looked to.
And now he would be more or less responsible for day-to-day operation.
That's right, yeah.
And the board of directors would be sort of the managerial
that's right,
part
yeah.
of it.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Now, surfboard shapes have changed considerably over the years. Could you tell us about some of the designs?
Well, those days we used just plain red wood, cedar and spruce wood for surfboards. It was quite a thing. We'd go down to the lumber yard, Lewis and Cook lumber yard, and keep in touch with the fellow down there. So whenever he had a plank that came in that was light, he'd call us up. We'd go down. Well, those days, they used to bring in planks 3 inches thick, 24 inches wide, and 8, 10, 12 feet long. And from those planks, we'd shape out the surfboard. And of course, those boards of those days were rather heavy. They probably weighed anywhere from 50 to 60, 70, 80 pounds. They probably were all right for surf at Waikiki, because the surf in Waikiki, when they came in large surf, the waves were quite uniform and were, you might say, far enough apart so that the effect or influence of one swell or one wave didn't have anything to do with the other. And as a wave came in to the shore, it poured over, it was gradually increasing, going to the left. Now, those boards were, you might say, heavy, and they were stable, but they were not